So I was the site coordinator for their farm share at Lehman College. I learned the logistics of food distribution, and I witnessed how a structured program could bring fresh produce directly into underserved communities like Lehman College, which happens to have a very high rate of student food insecurity. And it really shaped my understanding that just access alone, just bringing produce alone into schools or into a community isn't enough. That you need food education to accompany that in order to have a kind of successful program.
You're listening to the Communitas of New York podcast, where we invite you, our business-focused listener, to join us in our strategic focus on business development, specifically with guests who are alumni of the Communitas Ventures Accelerator Program. In our third season, we hold conversations about engagement and community-driven entrepreneurship. Creating positive and hyper-local impact means fostering deep understanding with stakeholders. We invite you to hear entrepreneurs discuss their own experiences with meeting and collaborating with their fellow community members where they are at, developing and serving with carefully designed and innovative solutions. I'm your host, Monique T. Marshall. This is episode 18 with Gail Sorsch of Bronx Eats. Gail, welcome to the Communitas of New York podcast. Good to have you here.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
Yeah, I'm ready to get into all the amazing things that you are doing at Bronx Eats. So if we could just start there, would you tell us a little bit about Bronx Eats and your background?
Yeah, sure. So I founded Bronx Eats in 2019 in response to two different health issues that I was observing in the Bronx. One is difficulty accessing fresh, nutritious produce and insecurity around cooking from scratch. So now Bronx Eats is a DOE-approved vendor, and we're running produce distributions and plant-based cooking education workshops in schools and with other partner organizations throughout the borough.
Mm. I love that you're doing that. And one of the things is the fact that there are many gaps in the Bronx in terms of food access and education. So what is your experience in terms of witnessing examples of the most visible or prevalent instances of such disparities?
Yeah, great question. The most visible gap that I see is the lack of fresh produce in many neighborhoods. But there's also an invisible gap where many families who want to cook healthy meals but lack the confidence or knowledge to prepare fresh ingredients from scratch. That's also a gap Bronx Eats is ready and excited to fill by offering cooking workshops and plant-based demos.
I love that. And you talk about the visible gaps. So there are some invisible effects. And let's talk about what those are and those less detectable gaps around this issue.
Yeah, well, food insecurity creates a kind of cascade of health issues, diet-related diseases, missed school and work days, increased healthcare costs. And it also affects mental health and community cohesion when families can't afford or simply don't share meals together.
And I want to take a step back and talk about what you mean when you say plant-based cooking and why specifically this kind of cooking is important and why it matters.
Yeah, plant-based cooking is important because most of us do not eat enough fruits and vegetables. And in order to be excited about eating more fruits and vegetables, it really helps to have a creative, wonderful local chef to teach you. So the idea is to offer and bring forward and showcase really the best talent that New York City has to offer to get people excited about eating things that will really support their health.
Yeah. I love that. And I love that you say like having a chef to teach you, because I think with cooking, sometimes people can get intimidated by cooking as well. And what are the knock-on effects in society and community do food disparities and lack of cooking education have?
Well, as I mentioned, I do think that a lot of chronic disease is both reversible and preventable. And our entire life and our ambitions and our dreams depend on nourishing our bodies in ways that can support all of that. So not having access to food and not having the ability to make good food for yourself, for your families, has very serious consequences on individuals and on the collective.
Mm-hmm. And Gail, can you remember the first time you became aware that there exists inequality in the distribution of access to and or dissemination of knowledge around nutritious foods?
Yeah, I think through my work in urban farming and market management, I saw firsthand how geography determines access to nourishing food. So some neighborhoods, always wealthier ones, have abundant fresh food options and grocery stores, and others have virtually none. Mm-hmm. So the vast majority of Bronx neighborhoods are almost always underserved.
Yeah. And speaking of geography, with Bronx Eats, I love the name, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah. Do you focus on the whole borough, or are there hot spots of activity for the venture?
Yeah, we're excited because we're a mobile organization. We don't have a brick and mortar building, and that really means that we can go wherever we're needed. So currently we're serving 10 schools. Many of these are supported through the DOE Food and Nutrition Grant, and we also partner with local nonprofits throughout the borough. So we're on the go, and we come to our partners rather than them coming to us.
Yeah. 10 schools, that is a big deal. That is a
right?
Big deal.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love that. And you're talking about being mobile. Can you talk a little bit about the Fordham Farmers Market?
Oh, yeah. So the Fordham Farmers Market was really a labor of love. We built a thriving market from scratch at Fordham Plaza, which is, of course, one of the major commercial centers of the Bronx, and in a location that really has been long neglected. So we brought in the freshest local produce from upstate New York, fresh baked goods, and other local vendors. So we were supporting small businesses throughout the New York area, and we served over 2,000 customers weekly, accepted EBT, and we distributed health bucks. But it was more than just a place to shop. We held Zumba and other fitness classes during the market hours, and we created really a true community hub where neighbors could get fresh food, stay active, and connect with each other.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And what is it like to launch a brand new farmers market? Can you kind of walk us through that process and who's all involved, and how soon after you started it, did you start getting feedback and suggestions from the community?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, it does require a lot of work, securing permits and recruiting farmers and diverse vendors. You know, every farmer's market likes to have diversity of vendors. We were very committed to establishing the payment system that included EBT before opening the market so that on day one, we could process EBT and also offer health bucks. Of course, we needed to find volunteers and market our new enterprise to the community and basically build trust and a buzz and foot traffic with residents. And I'm very grateful and very thankful that we were able to do all of that.
Yeah. And I noticed that you also have background in classics and linguistics in education, in the veins of development, psychology, and culinary curricula. How do these varied experiences inform your work with Bronx Eats?
Yeah, I would say my background in classics is a little bit unusual. I studied ancient Greek and Latin, but I would say that really did strengthen my ability to communicate clearly across diverse cultures and communities. I also happen to love languages. And my master's in education was really a totally different venture for me, but also provided a strong foundation in developmental learning and effective classroom pedagogy. A lot of our workshops now happen in schools, so I think that's sort of, you know, been an important sort of foundation for being able to do the work I'm doing now. And the culinary training at the Institute for Culinary Education really built my confidence and my credibility in the kitchen. So then the most recent schooling or education that I went back for was master's in organizational leadership at Lehman College right here in the Bronx. I was in the first class of that degree, and that really equipped me with the tools to design and sustain effective systems with a new organization like Bronx Eats.
That's awesome. And you were the site coordinator for Corbin Hill Food Project's Farm Share, speaking of Lehman's College, so at Lehman's College in the Bronx. Can you talk a little bit about that experience and how that shaped the ideas about food justice?
Yeah, that was really an important role for me in terms of my thinking about Bronx Eats. So I was the site coordinator for their farm share at Lehman College. I learned the logistics of food distribution, and I witnessed how a structured program could bring fresh produce directly into underserved communities like Lehman College, which happens to have a very high rate of student food insecurity. And it really shaped my understanding that just access alone, just bringing produce alone into schools or into a community isn't enough, that you need food education to accompany that in order to have a kind of successful program.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. And Gail, you've done a lot of phenomenal things, and you speak about like being able to serve in 10 schools and building the market from scratch and so many other things. Did you also have an education in terms of running a business? And what kind of business knowledge did you have when starting out with your venture?
I had operational experience from market management and urban gardening work, but I really learned the entrepreneurial side, you know, the fundraising, the pitching, the financial sustainability, largely by doing the work.
Yeah. And so in retrospect, what do you wish you would have known when first starting out with Bronx Eat?
I wish I had known how important it is to build sustainable revenue streams from the beginning, because the pay-for-service model, which is what Bronx Eats has, is challenging when your target communities often can't afford to pay full price.
And speaking of, so knowing all of these things, and as you mentioned, learning as you go in a lot of ways, how did the nutritional education component of Bronx Eats develop over time?
So it evolved really organically while working at urban farms and as a site coordinator distributing fresh produce. People would often ask me, what do I do with this? And that question made me realize that access, as I said, to fresh produce without the cooking education to go with it wasn't enough. So we needed to meet people where they were and show them how to use fresh ingredients. Obviously, many people do know how to cook, but those who don't, they might be standing in front of the freshest vegetables available in the whole borough and still not want to purchase it. So the education piece really became very clear to me that it was a very important component.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things noted on your website is Department of Education approved. So including programs including professionally led plant-based cooking demonstrations. What kind of work with the DOE is necessary in terms of bringing such curricula to the schools?
So becoming a DOE approved vendor involves being vetted by them and compliance with health and safety standards and making sure that your programs align with their educational goals. And we were very fortunate to be included in this year's DOE Food and Nutrition Grant.
Yeah. That's so good. And one of the things I love that you mentioned is that you are really big on getting the community involved. And so we've been focusing our conversation these days on community-driven entrepreneurship and really collaboration with the community. So for you, in what ways do you seek out community collaboration as an entrepreneur?
So we partner with local nonprofits for demos and food distributions at book signings, street fairs, back to school events, and any other event that the community wants to invite us to. So we listen to what communities need rather than imposing what we think they should have. And we have established a name for ourselves, and people really do see us as an incredible addition to whatever they're hosting. And Bronx Eats actually gets invited to, you know, many, many things every month.
Yes. And speaking of what community needs, I think a big aspect of that is trust. So what are some of the examples of trust building that have had to happen in order to operate successfully, whether with farmers markets, educational offerings, and other programs of Bronx Eat?
Yeah, that's a really important question. I really think trust comes from showing up consistently and offering sliding scale pricing, you know, understand who you're working with, what kind of budgets they have. Also not requiring ID or registration when you don't need to. For example, our monthly produce giveaways at the Andrew Friedman Home are always open to the public without any registration or ID. And also hiring from within the community whenever possible so that the people teaching our classes are very relatable and very New York-based and people who the community can trust.
Mm-hmm. And I love that you have this model of the less friction as possible. So does not requiring registration pose a problem in terms of tracking impact?
You know, not really, because if we're tracking the produce that we're distributing, and in schools, I should say, we do have sign-ins, but for the distributions, we track it more by the produce we're distributing rather than the individuals who are getting it.
Got it. And with this, like, how do groups with whom you work with sometimes intersect in unexpected ways?
Yeah, a school cooking demo might connect a parent to our monthly produce giveaway. That happens often, right? We'll do a demo in a school, and then I'll mention that we have these public produce giveaways, and people from those schools will then come, and that can connect them to a partner, nonprofit services in other ways, because the events we do that are public also have different vendors and different events going on and different people who are tabling. So I think food becomes the entry point for broader community support.
Mm-hmm. And Gail, do you have any mentors in the community or teachers from whom you've gained inspiration?
Oh, I have many mentors. But honestly, the community members themselves, I think, are my greatest teachers. You know, people are very honest, especially children. They tell me what works, what doesn't, what they like, what they need. And, you know, trying to stay humble and not go in assuming I know what people need and really listening. Although I must say that a lot of times, especially with children, you hear children say, I hate tomatoes. And then all of a sudden you're doing a demo that has tomatoes in the salad and they decide they want seconds and thirds. So sometimes you have to be careful about, you know, trusting them too much in that way.
Yeah, don't knock it until you try it.
Exactly.
So good. And do you have any examples of this, like any feedback that you've gotten from mentors?
Feedback that I've gotten, I think that we have gotten really, by and large, very positive responses there. We have gotten questions about certain ingredients. Where can I find this? I don't see this in my community. And yeah, we really try and avoid using things that people can't purchase easily within their own communities. So we take that kind of feedback very seriously. And we also try to keep our recipes very accessible and uncomplicated. You know, we're not trying to be top chef where, you know, it takes 5 days to make it.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of chefs and the community, how do you find local chefs and who are they? Do folks who benefit from your programs ever come back and cook in the programs?
We don't necessarily hire people who have gone through our programs, but we do value the chefs who we have a lot. They're yes, sort of the backbone of our work. And a lot of them are really expert at simplifying recipes and, you know, talking about substitutions. If you're dairy lactose intolerant and don't want dairy, substituting non-dairy milks and other kinds of improvisation that you can do in the kitchen. They're really very skilled at that.
And so on a more personal note, do you have any favorite kinds of recipes, demonstrations, or simplified recipes from the program?
Yeah, there are many recipes that people love. And we hear from parents all the time who say their kids are now asking for more vegetables, or teachers who tell us that students are teaching the recipes that they learned with us to their parents, you know, or sometimes we'll do parent evenings and then the parents are making those recipes for their children. So really those stories are what are fueling work, the program participants getting really inspired and activated from the work that we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love how intentional you are with everything and just like the curriculum. So I would love to dive into your process of developing a curriculum for Bronx Eats programs in the schools.
Yeah. So as I think I mentioned, we really focus on accessible, mm-hmm, affordable plant-based recipes using ingredients that we're either distributing right there in front of them or that we know that they can access in local neighborhood stores. So the curriculum that we use emphasizes building confidence and technique rather than complicated recipes, right? We're really trying to make this very accessible.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things I like that you also mentioned is that sometimes the teachers will tell you like what the students like and all the things. So how does your curriculum change based on community feedback or via observations you make in your work in the schools?
Yeah, I mean, I can't say it's happened very often, but, you know, if there's a recipe that is not really appreciated, really honestly hasn't happened, you know, we would take that out of the rotation, as it were. But honestly, I work with such fantastic chefs, and I can't even remember a demo that hasn't been successful. But if there were such a thing, or we were getting negative feedback about mm-hmm, a particular recipe, we would be very quick to remove it.
Yeah. And do you have or do you hear feedback from folks who have attended Bronx Eats programs or who have benefited from accessing the farmers market you run? And what kinds of feedback do you get from the community and in what forms?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people at the market were saying that they were cooking for the week based on what was available at the market. And of course, that's wonderful because yeah, all the food and fruits and vegetables that we were selling were local and grown either that day or the day before. And so the idea that people are really able to organize their diets around fresh fruits and vegetables really made us very excited. Participants at the market were really very grateful for that offering. And otherwise, program participants, yeah, they're just excited when we get there. So we like to say that even if you have one recipe that you love, that's great. Start with one recipe, you know, yeah, and you can always build from there.
Yeah. And I love that you mentioned cooking for the week because that's so amazing because it changes the patterns of access to food and organizing nutrition. And it has this knock-on effect to make healthy choices and habits in the future. So it's like an extended part of the education Bronx Eats provides. And I also think it's great for reducing waste.
Absolutely. And eating seasonally, right?
Yeah, most certainly. And so food and the gathering of people go hand in hand. What unexpected things have you learned from witnessing the gathering of people around the farmers markets and education program that Bronx Eats runs?
Yeah, I mean, one of the really wonderful things about food is that it creates community in ways that I couldn't even have anticipated. So at the farmers market, you know, I watch strangers share recipes and drum up new friendships, and parents and seniors engaging in social connections. The market becomes more than just a place to buy food. It becomes a gathering space. And I think that's also true, you know, around demos and around food distributions. People talk about what they like to do with the food, and they talk about, you know, things that their grandparents made. And, you know, food is always something that sort of generates a really exciting conversation about culture and community that I think really gets people excited.
Yeah. And it really speaks to the spirit of collectivity and also that social connectivity that you spoke about earlier.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And so, Gail, I'm pretty sure this journey has not been easy for you. So I want to talk about some of the challenges, the lessons, and the observations that you've had. So what have been some of those reality check moments that you faced while guiding your venture?
Yeah, I think that realizing that even when we offer services on a sliding scale, many schools and organizations still don't have a budget for health and wellness programs. Wow. So we have to subsidize our work through constant fundraising.
Mm. Wow. And what does that look like when you say constant subsidizing?
Actually, this year we're going to be doing a food and fashion gala in May. I'm very excited about that. The details have yet to be fully mapped out, but raising money either through individuals or through grant writing or through events like a gala to subsidize the important work that we're doing.
Yeah, I love that. And speaking of fundraising, so one of the things you talked about earlier is the fundraising and the payment model. Are you willing to share a little bit more about how Bronx Eats sustain itself financially?
Yeah, well, the Bronx is an under-resourced borough with very tight budgets. So organizations want our services, but they can't always pay for them. So that creates kind of a tension between our mission and financial sustainability. So we have really relied on the generosity of donors, individual donors originally, and grants that we received. And over time, you know, especially now with the food and nutrition grant, there is some money to cover some of the basic costs of the work that we're doing within the Department of Education. So it's been kind of an evolution.
Yeah. Yes. And what have been some of the unexpected challenges that you face when it comes to working amongst the community?
Yeah. Just being able to serve the community well.
Yeah.
And not turn people away has been challenging. You know, I really hate to tell people that we can't always work for free, but the reality is we can't. So just try to be careful about balancing the need to cover our costs and serve the community well.
I could definitely see that that would be a tough challenge for sure. And so what are some of the challenges when it comes to like even developing the curriculum or programs that you face?
Yeah. So balancing the educational goals with, you know, just the practical constraints, like we have limited time. Usually the demos are 60 minutes. Sometimes we're in a classroom. So, you know, it's not a kitchen. We obviously bring in supplies and we can bring in a burner to cook on and that kind of thing. But there's also varying skill levels among students, among parents. So we aim to have high impact in every demo session within the constraints of the environment that we're in.
Mm-hmm. And typically, how large are the sessions and the number of students?
You know, it really varies because sometimes we're in a student classroom of 15 to 20 students, and sometimes we're invited to, let's say, a back-to-school fair where there's hundreds of parents and students, and we can accommodate all of that, and we offer tastings at the end of every demo. So it really depends on what the event is and what the needs are.
Yeah. Okay. That's awesome. And what is your most recent triumph or eureka moment or a revelation or something that really made you reflect on the way that you guide your venture?
Well, being selected for the DOE Food and Nutrition Grant was really quite exciting, and it validated our pivot from the farmers market into schools. I mentioned that we had the Fordham Farmers Market up and running very successfully and then decided to pivot into schools. And really, within a few months, the Food and Nutrition Grant approved us to do that work. And I think that shows that our model of combining cooking education with produce distribution is really a very effective and impactful model.
Yeah, most certainly. And what comes along with that grant? Is it more access to DOE as a vendor as well as funding, or is there a promise of continued access to a network that you maybe didn't have access to before?
Well, I think in order to work with some of these schools that have been given these grants for food and nutrition education, they can't work with you unless you're under that grant umbrella. So it just gave me access to hundreds of schools within the New York City, you know, within New York City and certainly within the Bronx. I'm really mainly working with schools in the Bronx. There are some exceptions, but it just opened up the number of schools that I can work with, that Bronx Eats can work with.
Oh, so the schools get grants and then you are designated as somebody with whom those schools can work.
Exactly. Got We're it. A vendor for that grant. So then schools get to decide among, I think there may be 40 vendors for that grant, and the schools get to choose which vendor they want to work with. And to be very honest, I was very happy because we had more people interested in working with us than we could accommodate this year and are hoping to grow next year. So yeah, there's obviously huge interest. We had pages and pages of schools and principals who were interested in being served by us this year. And that was very, very exciting and validating.
That is awesome. That's a good problem.
Exactly. It's a good problem to have. When it rains, it pours.
Yes, for sure. I love that. And now shifting to, so practically speaking, are there any regulations or else liabilities that you need to watch out for when you are running a farmer's market? For example, do you need to take out any kind of special insurance or look out for anything in particular when it comes to health regulations?
Well, yes, there are permits from the city, there's liability insurance, health department compliance, and proper handling of EBT transactions. You know, these are all, EBT is, of course, USDA. The New York City Health Department is the one who handles the health bucks, so you're dealing with governmental organizations and have to follow very strict rules and regulations when you're, you know, managing a program under them. So there is significant administrative work behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. And have there been any issues lately with funding and EBT programs?
Yeah, so I'm not operating the market right now, so the EBT funding doesn't impact me, but I'm very aware that this recent crisis that funding was being withheld affected a lot of the people who I serve. So I've been very actively posting about different opportunities, especially around Thanksgiving, to get, you know, free meals and free turkeys and all kinds of things that are not specific programs that Bronx Eats is running, but just as a way to be a good community citizen sharing information. I've been doing a lot of work to just make sure that people are not going hungry.
Right. So you've helped people navigate when they didn't have access to SNAP and such.
Exactly. The past month has been really quite challenging. And I do feel like people have really benefited from information sharing. And there's been a lot of work. A lot of people are really rising to the challenge to offer more. You know, the food pantries are getting more food and there are more volunteers and there's more dates for collecting food. But now SNAP has been reintroduced. So hopefully it's going to be a slightly less of a crisis.
Yeah, hopefully. I love that. And Gail, you've had some experience pitching. So for example, in the Communitas Ventures Accelerator Program and also in the Diversity Innovation Hub pitch event. Is pitching a regular part of your work to further the mission of Bronx Eats?
Absolutely. Whether it's to funders or school administrators or partner organizations, I'm constantly telling the story of Bronx Eats and making the case for why this work matters. And I actually do credit Communitas for helping me hone my skills with pitching.
Yes, we love Communitas.
Yes.
And do you have any advice for those involved in food access and education about how to tell a story of what they're trying to achieve when it comes to pitching?
You know, I learned from Communitas actually that you lead with impact, not process. So you don't just explain what you do, you show the tangible difference it makes in people's lives. So using specific stories and especially data whenever possible, I really have gotten much more focused on evaluating and measuring things by, you know, how many pounds of produce am I giving out? You know, how many families received bags of fruits and vegetables and how many people attended the demos? All of that data has to be mined for impact.
Mm-hmm. Oh, certainly. Data tells that story.
Data tells a story, exactly.
Yeah. And Gail, do you have a team or retained contractors with whom you work regularly? And also, what are some of the details that you can share in terms of managing that teamwork?
Yeah, so we are a very lean organization, mainly built on interns and volunteers. And of course, the most important are my contracted professional chefs. So this allows us to scale up or down based on the need, and that keeps overhead low. So I don't have any full-time staff, but I do have many people that I work with on a part-time basis.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about volunteers, like, how do you get people on board with the mission?
How do I get people on board? I've worked very closely with Lehman College and also Fordham University. A lot of their students are required to do community service hours as part of their graduation requirement. Oh. And so that has actually been very supportive to Bronx Eats to include them in the work that we're doing and expose them to food justice work and also have them complete their community service hours.
Mm-hmm. That's so awesome. Getting that experience and making an impact. I love that. And can you talk about any pivots that you've had to make, whether planned or unexpected?
Yeah, as I mentioned, although the Fordham Farmers Market was really successful by all metrics, I decided to pivot into the school system in order to have greater impact. So distributing more produce and educating the next generation and turning schools into food hubs. Mm-hmm. So that was a pivot that took some thoughtfulness. And actually, I consulted people at Communitas about that decision, because when you start something and it's successful, it seems you have to pause before you actually change it up, right? Because it's successful, why would you change it up? But it turns out if you can have greater impact in other places, it makes sense to pivot. And it's definitely proven true in the case of Bronx Eats.
Mm-hmm. I like that you bring up that question of if it's successful, why would you pivot? Because I think a lot of times entrepreneurs face this moment where it's just like you want to stick with what you've been doing and it's hard to let go. So for you as a leader, what mindset shift did you have to make in order to say this is the decision that I'm going to make, and kind of like that process?
Yeah, that's really a very deep question. First of all, I relied a lot on people who are more experienced than I am in the business world. And it actually is a sign of intelligence to be able to pivot even when you have a good thing going. You know, if you believe, and I was told this by people at Communitas and elsewhere, that if you believe you can have greater impact elsewhere, you know, you may be disappointing one community, but you're actually really benefiting another community. So you just have to trust your instinct at a certain point that your new direction is actually going to increase your impact in a way that your current project can't.
Yeah.
And that was certainly true. Moving away from the farmers market into schools has absolutely, like, my impact is 10 times greater.
Mm-hmm. That's some solid advice. I think that's a breakthrough for somebody listening for sure. And speaking of Communitas, let's talk about the role of Communitas in collaborating. So we are on the Communitas of New York podcast, and we mentioned Communitas a handful of times now. So you were a member of Communitas Ventures Accelerator Program. Can you say a little bit about your experience with Communitas America?
Yeah, Communitas was a really great opportunity. The particular cohort I was in was focused on food justice. So I met a lot of people from the food justice space, and we got to know each other, learned from each other, collaborated, you know, both on the projects we were doing during the program. And also I've stayed in touch with a few of them since the program ended. And I just think the program provided a real sense of community during my early years of running Bronx Eats.
For sure. And since you've gone through the Ventures Accelerator Program, have you been able to intersect in community or perhaps at the Hay Ground Harlem? So work with anyone, any other alumni?
I really haven't, but it's not because I don't want to. I've just been kind of busy with my work and haven't really gotten there. I did go to one event shortly after I graduated the cohort, and I loved it. They showed it was sort of a movie and dinner kind of evening, and it was great. And I would go back. I would go back, and I do read the emails and a desire to stay connected.
Yeah. For sure. That's understandable. You're in the work, doing the work. So sometimes it's those busy seasons.
Yeah.
And so now let's talk about the future. So how do you measure progress internally?
I think I measure progress by the number of people we serve and the number of partnerships we build, and also the feedback that we receive from participants. So the question is, can we still sustain and grow this work? That's how I measure our progress. And so far, the answer has been, yes, we can sustain it. And yes, we can grow it. So I take that to be a good sign.
That is a good sign. And so my next question is, what are the challenges as you grow to measure as indicators change? Like, if you scale up, do the targets change?
Well, I think that, you know, the target is to have increased confidence around cooking and increased access to fresh produce. and long-term behavior change. So if families are continuing to cook healthy meals beyond our programs, then I would say we have had effective impact.
Mm-hmm. All the work that you've done and all the things that you've accomplished, but you still face challenges, as you mentioned, when it comes to funding. Like, some people have not placed a budget on making sure that people have access to food. And so what do you hope to see in terms of the future, in terms of change of government and putting an emphasis on funding and prioritizing this area and industry?
Well, I think the city government could simplify the way in which they allocate funding for programs that address food insecurity. I will share that I was the recipient of a grant from a Bronx City Council member, and the hoops that you have to jump through to receive a rather small grant, to be honest, was absolutely unbelievable. I literally cannot tell you how frustrated and demoralized I became after months and months and months of trying to send them every document under the sun in the format that they required. And so I've moved on from that, but I think the city government could do a better job in supporting organizations that are small and awesome and serving local communities that they supposedly care about. So that's one thing. I think that a lot more money needs to be funneled into issues that are really epidemic. Food insecurity is really an epidemic in the Bronx, and I think a lot more funding deserves to be allotted towards alleviating hunger and improving health. You know, we have a diabetes crisis, we have an obesity crisis, we have a mental health crisis, and all of this is improved when you eat properly. So, you know, as the saying goes, food is medicine, and if you don't have access to good food, you can't actually take care of yourself. So I would just love to see more funding around something as basic as how people eat and survive.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people can relate to that's such a powerful answer. And as a leader for you, how do you keep moving forward when you're facing those roadblocks or those challenges? What are some of the things and the mindset shifts or maybe the practices that you have in terms of taking care of yourself to press forward?
Yeah, I mean, I've gotten a lot more support lately around fundraising, and that's been really helpful. We're, as I mentioned, we're planning Bronx Eats Food and Fashion Gala that's going to be called Garden of Eating. And I'm very excited about that. And hopefully that will, you know, be a big boost to the programming that we're able to do. And yeah, it's just one foot in front of the other until, you know, you feel like you can contribute in the ways that you would like. It really just depends on having the bandwidth and the funding to continue this work.
Yes. And I love that name, the Garden of Eating.
Yeah.
So creative. And so much of this conversation has gone back to, at its roots, a spirit of collectivity and knowledge transfer and the momentum that comes with it. And that includes transfer in the sense of nutrition, feeding our bodies and keeping community strong. It's such amazing work. And so what's next for your venture?
What's next is, I believe that next year we definitely will expand further into the DOE system and work with more public schools and deepen our partnerships with community organizations. We do want to also continue our monthly produce giveaways, which have been extremely popular. And we're also exploring how to make our model replicable in other under-resourced communities. So even though we're called Bronx Eats, we can do what we do in other places, and we're looking into how that could happen.
That is exciting. I have no doubt that it's going to happen. And I'm excited to see as you continue to blossom. And if you could give one short piece of advice to entrepreneurs who are just starting out in their journeys, those who are passionate about food justice and education, what would you tell them?
Yeah, I think it's very important. It doesn't really only apply to the food justice world, but listening more than you talk is, I think, pretty key. And I learned recently that, you know, without getting political, and I really am not getting political here, that the person who ran Mamdani's campaign had never run a campaign before. And she obviously did a fantastic job, and that's why he won. But the way she describes how she did her job is literally going to talk to anyone who had run a campaign before and gathering information and just humbling herself and listening to what other people had done to win campaigns. And you can see that the result of that listening turned into one of the best run campaigns that's ever happened. So I see that as a great example for, you know, how to be successful in whatever work you're doing. And I try to be an active listener. And I do believe that the community knows what it needs and that my job is to create solutions that relate to what people want, not solutions that, you know, relate to my vision of what people should want. So I take my cues from people who are in higher positions than myself.
That is some great advice. Listening more than you talk. And I heard someone recently say that a lot of people don't want to look like beginners anymore. And so I love that you're saying, like, no, go get the help, listen to people, even if you don't know something, and it's okay to not know.
Absolutely. Yeah. I feel like the people who are able to pivot and understand the needs of the community really have to always be open to learning.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's all projection and it's all ego. And I try to really avoid that pitfall.
Mm-hmm. And Gail, this has been an amazing conversation. So valuable, so fruitful. And I know people who are listening, they're going to know where can they find you and support you. So please do share.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really am grateful to you for inviting me. Yes, the Bronx Eats website is bronxeats.org. And you can also follow us on social media at Bronx Eats Inc. That's Bronx Eats INC. Or you can come to one of our monthly produce giveaways. That's the third Wednesday of every month. And again, no ID or registration is required. So wherever the Bronx community needs us, you can always DM me. You can shoot me an email through the website. And I'm happy to be in touch with anyone who'd like to host us or support us.
Certainly. Gail, thank you again for being on Communitas of New York, and thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you so much. I'm really grateful for the opportunity.
For sure. You're welcome. Visit our website for more information about this and all of our shows. You can find that as well as information about the entrepreneurs and conversation in the show notes. Thank you for listening and see you soon. My name is Monique T. Marshall, and this is Communitas of New York. Season 3 is produced by Simone Jean and David Michael D. Gregoria.